conclusion. On this slide, to ask a question of the panelists, you want to use the chat function in Zoom to enter your inquiries. I'll serve as a moderator for the conversation, and as these questions come in, I'll select questions to pass along to our panelists. If you do have any technical difficulties that don't allow you to submit a question, my colleague Stephen Hall, who you've all communicated with via email, is also monitoring his inbox, so you could submit questions to him anytime. His email address is shall, that's S-H-A-L-L, at eab.com. Finally, please make sure that if you're an audience member today, you're muting your phone or the mic and speakers options on your computer. We want to make sure that everyone can hear the information from our panelists with minimal feedback and background noise. Thank you for that. Now, I know that many of you were able to join on our kickoff webinars, and so you're familiar with the process that we've used to conduct research on behalf of procurement leaders in higher ed. But as a quick overview for those of you who may be joining us for the first time, we started with four kickoff webinars that allowed nearly 60 procurement leaders from across the US and Canada to join together to share their concerns with one another and with my research team, to start to develop a peer network beyond their region or existing organizations. We also used those conversations as an opportunity to source research topics for my team to pursue moving forward. My team then conducted secondary research and follow-up interviews with a number of you to better understand the challenges that you surfaced and identify promising solutions. So today's webinar, the gray box in the timeline on your screen, we'll share some of the promising solutions that we heard on just one of the topics that you surfaced, your efforts to expand the strategic capabilities of your procurement units. We'll share lessons learned and best practices of several other of the topics that you raised in our results webinar in 2 weeks' time. And then later in spring, we'll publish these findings in a white paper that you could all download. Both of these webinars, today's and the one on the 13th, will be archived on eab.com for subsequent viewing. So if you can't make the second session, don't worry. And you'll also have the opportunity to pass along the deck and the recording to any colleagues who you might want to also view the materials. For your reference, I listed the other most common challenges that we heard in those kickoff webinars on this next slide. By far, the desire to expand strategic sourcing capabilities of your units was the most common challenge that we heard. So it made sense for us to convene an experienced panel and do a deep dive on this topic during today's session, since this topic is so clearly top of plate for so many of you. We'll share tactics and advice on several other of these topics during our results webinar on February 13th, like I mentioned. But in the meantime, you can access our blog post on these topics on the link on your screen if you're interested in learning more and hearing about those conversations in the kickoff webinars. But before we jump into today's discussion, let's think about why strategic transformations are such a top of mind topic. I know I don't need to sell you all on the importance of the topic. Across our kickoff webinars, many of you expressed a desire to move from transactional to more strategic finance functions. You know that your functions have the greater potential to achieve more cost savings and even generate revenues for your institutions through activities like the ones I listed out on this slide. Analyzing data to inform contract negotiations and other spending decisions, negotiating new strategic vendor partnerships, reviewing and revising policies to increase compliance and maximize cost savings, and getting campus buy-in for complying with procurement policies and engaging your team as strategic partners. But our transitions from transactional to strategic finance functions have been slow at best. That's because as much as we'd like to perform more strategic activities, we face three major barriers illustrated across the bottom. First, we need the right technology solutions, both to produce actionable spend data and to eliminate manual processes and increase your staff's capacity for more strategic work. Which of course means not just finding the right technology solution, but also having the resources to buy or build it. Second, in the middle, we need people with the right skill sets and the right roles. Skills to analyze data, communicate with internal customers and external buyers, and act decisively with high ethical standards. And finally, at Wright, we need to change campus buying behavior. This challenge is unique to higher ed, where many of our purchasing and contract decisions are made out in our academic units and other major operating units. We need unit leaders to understand how to make optimal buying decisions, why it's important, and how we can support them as partners, not rule enforcers. So in the next 50 minutes, we'll hear from three institutions that have made great progress in overcoming these three barriers. I've prepared a few questions to kick things off, but like I said, I'd like most questions to come from you. So please send any burning questions that you have our way. But without further ado, let me introduce our three panelists. First, we have John Storti, for AVP of Procurement and Business Services at Brandeis University. Brandeis is a private research university in Waltham, Massachusetts, about 9 miles west of Boston. John's in his sixth year at Brandeis, where he oversees strategic business and finance operations, implementations, procurement, contract reviews, accounts payable, disbursements, business services, and travel. He previously worked at Dartmouth and has also consulted the Massachusetts Governor's Office on strategic operations initiatives for the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority. He's considered a subject matter expert by Deloitte Consulting for procurement, strategic operations, and process improvement. Next, we have Kelly McGarry, Associate Director of Strategic Procurement Services at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Queen's is a public research university with a little under 25,000 students. Kelly joined Queen's University's Strategic Procurement Services Department as a procurement specialist in 2008 and has been in the institution ever since. Prior to joining Queen's, Kelly's career in the pharmaceutical industry spanned 10 years in supply chain management, with roles such as procurement leader and logistics manager. She applies strategic oversight while achieving operational objectives in all of her roles, and she was a leading member of the Queen's team on their successful implementation of a new procure-to-pay system, including an e-procurement tool and revamped credit card program. And finally, we're joined by Martin Hsu. Martin is strategic sourcing manager at NYU. NYU is a large private research university in New York City with also about 25,000 students. Martin has been in seat at NYU for 4 years, but he has over 17 years of private sector procurement experience before coming to higher ed. Most recently, he served as procurement manager at Nestlé Nespresso. John, Kelly, Martin, thank you so much for joining us on the line today. I'll specify who should respond to questions first as I ask them, just to moderate discussion. But to kick things off, we'll start with John and go sequentially as listed on the slide. But I'd love for each of you to give just a 2-minute overview for those of the line of the changes you've made across the past 3 to 5 years to increase the strategic capabilities of your procurement units. So John, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. So when I came to Brandeis University, we were a paper-based university with no real strategic sourcing and very transactional, as you described. And we were in dire need of moving the needle and moving this to a strategic function within a university. So a lot of what drove this was senior leadership deciding that we had a budget crunch and we were closing a deficit, and this was going to play a very important part. So that's a lot of what backed what we did. And within a very short period of time, we were able to move that from a paper-based system to a technology system. And that technology, so the idea was to lead with strategic sourcing and to support that through the operations and technology portion of that. So we implemented a tool called Coupa. That was our backbone for technology, and we totally transformed the procurement process and really went out on a strategic leading strategic, and we took a decentralized university and brought it to a center-led methodology for procurement.
Great, thank you, John. I'm excited to hear a little bit more as we move through this session today. Kelly, we'll turn to you next.
Thank you. I'll reiterate some of the comments that John has already mentioned. In the last 3 years, Queen's University, our department has gone through rapid change. I would describe it as rapid change. We're in the same boat in the fact that we are paper-based, we did not have an e-procurement tool, and that our senior leadership recognized the fact that we need to run the business like a business. So there was four areas of change that we focused on. Our department of 9 is now a department of 15. We looked at the org chart, we looked at job descriptions, we had 2 lower level positions that those folks decided to retire. We didn't replace them. We focused more on the senior level positions. Some of those tasks that were previously done by those positions were redistributed, or we decided, in fact, we didn't need to complete those tasks. But the major change was we had a new director that was hired 3 years ago, and our senior leadership empowered him to implement the changes. We also implemented an e-procurement tool, the Jagger tool set, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And that also drove the decision to bring accounts payable back within our department, within the procurement department. And that was very instrumental in the complete procure-to-pay system. And finally, to support all this, we overhauled our credit card program and significantly increased our rebates from the credit card program, which then allowed us to reinvest in both our people in terms of training. We added 2 positions that are funded through that rebate, as well as additional models or modules in our e-procurement tool set.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kelly. And Martin, we'll turn to you next.
Martin, Sue, I extend my welcome to everyone on the call. Looking at my picture, I guess I should have used a different picture. It seems like everyone else, John and Kelly, used a more professional picture. But just to continue on the topic, I was brought to the university from the corporate side to add strategic experience and implement change in an area that was, similar to both John and Kelly, very administrative. So when I joined, we had already made some transformation and created 2 divisions, one being an operational buyer group and the strategic sourcing team, which was non-existent before. A lot of the individuals that were in buyer roles before made the transition into the strategic team, but that was one of the key changes that we had made. On top of that, in 2016, we implemented a new P2P platform. And in 2017, we launched an RFX tool. So we are on the verge of making a lot more changes to the systems. We are in the process of also implementing, a contract management tool. So these are some of the things that we're doing to bring the university to the next level and become more strategic.
Great. Thank you for joining us today, Martin. I'm glad that all of you touched on technology and tools that you've implemented recently as part of these transformations. I know for many institutions, shifting from transactional strategic procurement wouldn't be possible without technology. So I'd love for each of you to describe some of the technology investments that your units have made across the past few years, with specific emphasis on how did you determine which vendors or modules to prioritize implementing, and also what those investments have enabled, and if we have time, what's next on your technology wish list. Kelly, why don't we start with you for this one?
Sorry about that. So we implemented the Jagger tool set, and We started off with the ePro and the accounts payable, and I'm not sure how familiar everyone else is with the Jaeger tool set. Originally it was SideQuest, and they rebranded to Jaeger. I know there is some Jaeger schools in the group, but we started off with ePro and accounts payable. We did decide early on that the accounts payable, we wanted a pure procure to pay system, so we had realized early on that accounts payable would come under the management of procurement services. And then shortly after, we did launch the total supplier management tool within Jaeger. But shortly before that, that was in May 2017. Before we went down the road of the e-procurement tool set, we did overhaul our credit card program, which actually ended up being hugely beneficial to our e-procurement launch, because the tax mappers and all the taxing coding was done for the credit card solution, which then we were able to move over to the e-procurement tool, which that was the biggest challenge, was actually all of our taxes are done within the tool, and it ended up being, it took some time, but it ended up being a very good move on our part. Workflows were a priority in the system. Our exception to policies or non-competes, before that was all paper transactional, and we of course wanted better spend analysis. And our next priorities, I would say, would be a contracts module, a travel program, a travel company that will interface with our Concur solution. We also want a better spend dashboard, whether or not that's the Spend Radar within Jaeger or a different dashboard tool set. And perhaps down the road, we can look at an inventory module for our facility stores and those types of programs.
Great,
and I would say these technology investments have resulted in us 82% of our transactions are completed within 24-hour period, whereas before was probably 5 to 7 days. So we've made huge gains in our turnaround time, and there's more visibility to the clients. And recently we went through a series here in Canada and Ontario. We have new trade treaties with Europe, and we had to provide reporting to our federal government, and we were able to provide that reporting in a way, in a time effective way, that we wouldn't have been able to a few years ago.
That's so great to hear. Thank you, Kelly. Martin, I believe NYU is also a Jaeger school. Would you like to take this question next?
Sure. So yes, we are a Jaeger tool as well. So we implemented the P2P platform. We actually selected Jaeger because we were already on their, we were part of their punch out site. So we were doing that, and then we said we need to, you know, put an P2P system together. So we engaged them, as well as their total supplier management platform, which I think gives you more compliance relative to avoiding any issues with, like, fraudulent changes to, you know, supplier profile, payment, bank accounts, etc. The next tool we had implemented was in 2017. We implemented Sourcing Director, which is also part of the Jaeger platform, which is the RFX tool. That has been really successful in a lot of areas, such as facilities. They use the tool heavily now to conduct, RFQs, RFPs, and it's all stored in our system. And in this current year, we are intending to launch Total Contract Manager, which is also part of the Jaeger platform, which will provide a central repository for our contracts, visibility to contracts across, you know, all business units, as well as leverage and maximize cost savings, you know, because we will be everyone can have visibility to contracts that are available right within the system. Some areas of probably for future are developing metrics as well as a spend analytics tool. You know, the university had a dedicated data analyst within procurement, but recently she has, you know, left the organization, the university, for another opportunity. But that is an area of that is important. In the past, we've done spend analytics, spend reporting for some of the business, the schools and business units, which does provide them a little bit of insight to what they're spending and how they're spending their funds. Another interesting area that we may we're looking to investigate is an AI tool for predictive analytics for supplier selection. That was shared with us at a conference that we at GE was looking at that tool or had that tool in place already, where they users can actually go in and see based on what they're looking to source or buy historical patterns of who the items were purchased with, as well as how it was paid for. So we thought that was an interesting tool. So we're investigating that as well for the future.
Great, thank you, Martin. And how did you, what was the decision process for going with the total contract management module next compared to some of these other investments on the horizon?
Because there was a need. There's the being that we're so decentralized, there were a lot of contracts that were held within the business units and schools that it made it difficult for us to have visibility. So that was one of the reasons why we felt this was more important, that we kind of have a tool to gain that visibility and not only visibility, but also, you know, ensure that there was a structured review process for the contracts.
Certainly, certainly. And John, you mentioned that you are a Coupa school. Can you share a little bit about how you decided on vendors and different modules and what your technology implementations has allowed your unit to achieve?
Yeah, sure. So our story is just a little bit different in that we started looking at this in 2013 when I came to Brandeis. And the market, it wasn't as saturated with the companies like it is today. But back then, as we were looking at this, we had to move quickly. This was something that was on the radar. This is something that we were charged to do, and we needed to move quickly. The issues that we were looking at and some of the roadblocks and obstacles that we had is we had an environment that was not used to change. We had an environment that was used to a very paper-based system. And so as we looked at it from a behavior and change management, we needed a system that we could implement fairly quickly and one that was that had a great ease of use. So we did look at a few different systems and software solutions, and we ended up going with Coupa, which at the time was kind of rated by Gartner as one of the up and coming. It wasn't that well known at the time. Matter of fact, we were one of the first largest higher ed clients to go with it. But we went with Coupa for a couple reasons, and that was because it was an Amazon-based platform, and we sold that to the community that, look, if you can use Amazon, and everybody was using Amazon, then you can use the system. And so from a change management and behavior management platform, it made sense for us. And so we did kind of take it step by step a little bit. We started out with procure to order because we needed to get up and running. We got that up and running in less than 20 weeks, which was incredible if you think about it from a rollout perspective. And for us, and then we rolled it into procure to pay, P-card integration, contract management, so the sourcing solution. So we're using all of the modules that were in there. For us, what was really important was that this was the tool that was going to help us enforce the policies and procedures that we had put in place, the new business processes that we developed, and it was going to help us to drive behavior and thus drive compliance, which is what we needed to do, because you could have the greatest contracts in the world, but if you're only getting 50% compliance, you're not doing that great. And that's how we looked at this. We said, we think the sourcing stuff is kind of easy in terms of doing all the contracts, but we want to make sure everybody's using it and we're driving compliance. So Coupa was a way for us to really roll this out in the marketplace and kind of help us enforce what we were trying to do. It also was sold from a visibility standpoint, because we didn't have the visibility in the community at Brandeis. It was very decentralized, very pocketed. Information was not easily shared. So this tool actually helped us not only to gather information, but share information, which went a long way in creating some of the programs that we rolled out.
Great. Thank you, John. Now, obviously, you all mentioned this in some fashion. The technology that you're implementing is useless without both staff that know how to use it and also the end users buying in and actually using the products that you implemented. I'd love to talk about your internal staffing perspectives first. How did the implementation of technology and the introduction of new strategic activities affect your staff, whether it be any organizational changes that you made, rescoping job descriptions, creating new roles? Martin, why don't we start with you for this one?
Sure. So, obviously, you know, anytime you implement new technology, a critical element is change management. And a lot of these employees are, you know, who have challenges with technology will either gravitate to the role and excel or transition out. So there were some changes, and that led to the split between, operational. Obviously, training a lot of the operational buyers had to be retrained into this new technology. So they had to learn the new system, and a lot of individuals who could not transition to learning the new system would, either retire or move to a different role. So also the focus of the customer service end needed to change, because in the past they were more focused on the administrative side, so they were just transactional. Now they need to be much more customer oriented, so they need to respond well to the client area as well as, so we do have some metrics in place as to, turnaround time for requisitions to purchase orders and the processing time that's required. So these are some of the metrics that we measure ourselves against with the new system.
Thanks, Burton. Kelly, you want to take that one next?
Sure. I would say overall, the staff in the procurement department welcomed and accepted the changes. It was recognized for quite a long time that we needed to do something. That being said, we did have two positions where folks decided to retire, and that was mine. I would say the remaining staff were energized and invigorated by the changes. It did, though, dramatically change our department organizational chart and the structure of the department. Before, we were 9 employees, and then we moved to 15 because we also added the accounts payable folks as well as the systems, 2 analyst positions. So we also added a new layer of management. Previously, it was the director and then the procurement group. Then the org chart changed to the sourcing side, which is the associate director manager, that's myself. We did have 4 buyers, now we have 6 buyers. And then there's the senior manager for our systems and accounts payable, more on the operations side. All of our job descriptions in the last few years have been updated. I will also say that our job postings, because at least a third of the positions were posted. In the past, we were not seeing good applicants to our job postings, and now we're seeing a real turn in that, where we are having very high quality applicants. I think they want to be a part of our team because we updated the job descriptions. We do pay a better price related to the market now. So I think we have a strong team. We're still working on the team because there's a lot of newer folks here that aren't used to the decentralized higher education. We are spending a lot of time training and mentoring, but we're really, really looking strong when I look at 3 to 5 years out. And I think as a group, I also agree with Martin that now that we aren't so focused on transactional, we're really focused on quality and service. Those are our main areas of focus now, not so much, you know, how quickly can I move this paper through the system.
Great. John, we'll turn to you for your staffing comments.
Yeah, so we went through a total restructuring. We're implementing a whole new center-led unit. We're bringing in new technology, so obviously we're creating new roles and new structure. So, you know, much to Martin's and Kelly's comments, some people come along for the ride and are very interested, and some aren't. And that's to be expected. I think what was important for us as we went through this exercise was a couple of things. One was we really definitely took a look. Well, we wanted to lead with the strategic side and support that with the operation. So there's that kind of divide, and I say that, but I also will tell you that everyone's cross-trained. Everyone understands everyone else's function and how that piece fits the whole and what the overall vision and purpose of what we're trying to do. That was very important for us. And understanding that, but we also look at as people were coming along. One of the things that we said is, what is it that you like to do? What is it that you want to do? And we try to put people in places that would help with long term success. And we looked at personalities a lot. So if somebody was analytical in nature and that's what they enjoy doing, we wanted to make sure that they were working on more analytical roles where that satisfied them from a professional level and really helped with productivity. If you were somebody who was maybe a leader and a type A personality and very strategic in nature, we gravitated that responsibility more towards the strategic side. So we really wanted to understand personalities and how that would fit with some of the roles that we were creating. At the same time, it was also very important that everybody understood what everyone else's role was, so they understood how it fit into what we were trying to accomplish.
Great. Thanks so much, John. Now, I know all three of you and many listeners on the line today have worked in procurement, not just at colleges and universities, but in other industries as well. So you appreciate that higher ed procurement leaders face some unique challenges, namely getting those folks out in the units, some of whom have tenure, on board with your purchasing policies and procedures. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you got stakeholder buy-in for the changes that you've made to the organization, whether it be implementing new technology tools or changing policies and procedures. John, why don't we start with you with this one?
Sure. So higher ed is such a great example of how to really work this, because policies and procedures in higher ed are really guidelines. And I say that because a lot of times I will say, you know, and I said that when I first came to Brandeis, they wanted to centralize. And I said, you can't centralize in higher ed. You can center lead. And they said, well, why is that? And I said, well, if you have the greatest office supplies contract in the world, but your tenured professor who brings in millions of dollars to your university wants to buy a pen from some vendor down the street, are you going to stop him? And everyone looked at each other and said, no. And I said, okay, so you want to center lead. And how you do that is buy-in. And so one of the ways that we do that is we really empower the stakeholders, the faculty, the staff, whoever it is, we empower them to help make the decisions to drive that. And we allow them to really move the process forward, because a peer-to-peer message comes across much better than an administrative edict any time of day. And so what we find is that the message that the decisions that they're making and help to drive this are the same ones that we're making, because we're leading with data. We're bringing data to the meetings, and we're using that data to allow the stakeholders to make the decisions, and the decisions that they're making are the right ones because they're data-based. And so once you empower that group and allow them to help you roll out, that's really the way that we drive a lot of the compliance that we do here, especially here at Brandeis, and that's how we get a lot of the buy-in. The other thing that we do very well is behavior management. So because of the tools we have in place and because of the technology we have in place, you can't stop everything. Sometimes we'll get an invoice for something that may or may not have followed the bid policy, but the work has already been done. And so we actually set out, we reach out to that person, and we say, well, this came through, we have a major problem, and it becomes behavior modification and behavior management so that mistake is not made again. So those are the things that really help us drive buy-in and compliance here at Brandeis.
Thanks, John. Kelly, do you want to take this one next?
Sure. I agree with a lot of John's statements. We try to use the carrot approach and not the stick approach, because our stick isn't actually that strong. So we've had some wins where we've been able to help the researchers, the faculty, the shared services and departments, we've really been able to prove to them that there is saving, and we are able to achieve their goals together, and we're able to mitigate risk. Risk is a huge topic here, and we know that by having procurement involved, a lot of the risks are mitigated. I would also state that for us in Ontario, so much of our infrastructure is government funded, that when we accept the money, there is a lot of obligations, and so we have that as sort of a, you know, here, you agree to this and this is how we're going to achieve it. But I find we don't have to go to that very often as much as we did 8-10 years ago. As far as rolling out the new technology and our e-procurement platform and our new credit card solution, it all happened within months of each other, so with rapid change. I would say we were very successful for the most part of getting buy-in from the end users out there. We had 2 days of focus groups with input from all the various faculties and shared services. There was a steering committee with representation from across campus. There was certainly senior leadership buy-in, which was very important. And I dare say one of the advantages we had was our existing system was such a poor tool set that there was complete frustration out there. So our new tool set was much easier to use, and it was very apparent to all the end users right from the beginning that this is going to be much easier and there's more information. So we did decide to go with a slow rollout, not the big bang. We went across campus. We strategically chose which departments would go live first and how we were going to roll it through campus. And then even now that we've had the tool set in place for a year and a half, 2 years now, we do offer tips and tricks sessions. We're always looking to improve. And if there is something that comes through, like an invoice for work that was already done, we call that a conversation starter. That's when we pick up the phone and call them and say, you know, how can we avoid this? Or, you know, what were the risks in you proceeding this way? And I would say overall, We're in a much better place. Because we have tools and analytics and data, now we're able to go out to the various departments and faculties and get them business reviews. And information is power, and they really enjoy the information that's coming out of these tools.
Ending comments. Thanks so much, Kelly. Martin, we'll turn to you last.
Okay. I totally agree with John and Kelly on their assessment of, you know, bringing in, you know, bringing in the various stakeholder buy-in.
What was
a little surprising to me coming from the corporate side is that in higher ed there is no mandate. So the term that I like to use is, you know, in the corporate environment you have a strategy and you get senior leadership buy-in and all of a sudden you just go out and execute. In higher ed there is no such thing. You have to go out and, you know, once you get senior leadership buy-in, now you have to go out to the various schools and admin units and basically socialize. So that's something that we've done. We conduct road shows within schools and admin units. We, you know, from a procurement standpoint. So there's been a gradual change and an increase in credibility through this interaction and responsiveness and support. We also provide spend analytics similar to the other speakers, that we get their buy-in and they need to be a part of the decision process. So we've also developed committees with like IT facilities to, you know, within the various schools and units to also listen in on what we're trying to do and then collectively determine whether or not the decision is the right decision. So I think that is some of the things that you can do to be successful in this area of getting stakeholder buy-in.
Great, thank you. Well, that was the end of my prepared questions. I will open it up to each of you to go around for closing thoughts, any successes that you didn't get to share, tips that you'd have for the group. Before I turn it to Q&A, but just plug to everyone else, this is a good time to input your questions into Zoom if you have any. We'll have time for two or three at the end. But why don't we go around once more. John, any closing thoughts that you didn't add or tips that you'd like to share with the group?
So closing thoughts is again, I think that Kelly and Martin did a real good job. The buy-in is really what makes the procurement person successful. So driving compliance and the buy-in in university, as Martin talked about, a lot of people come in from outside of higher ed, from corporate, and they can't believe how higher ed actually works, and it's a different animal. And what makes a successful procurement officer is somebody who actually is really good at getting that buy-in. I think that is so important. You can be brilliant, and the things that you implement are brilliant, but if nobody's doing it, it's not really doing any good. So that is the tip for success, I think, that really drives some of the things that we're talking about.
Great. Thank you so much again for sharing your story today, John. Kelly, closing thoughts?
A few things. Thank you for the discussion today, because I've taken away some good takeaways as well. I would say for us here at Queen's, increasing our revenue source for the department, we did that through our Scotiabank Visa program, and specifically the Visa Payables automation. With that, we were able to reinvest in our people, add headcount, and additional modules to our procure to pay system. We're really focused on building the team and the team for the future. I think consistency amongst our group has built confidence in our customers across campus. And overall, we have a saying here, we've moved from the procurement police into more of a trusted advisor. So it's no longer us calling up people and saying, you broke this rule, you didn't do it this way. We've moved to our phones ringing off the hook now all the time saying, you know, what's your business advice on this? They're looking to us for our business acumen, and that has taken a while to get there, and we're there. Now we just need to always make sure that moving forward, we're providing the best service and that we are using the tools to their full capability, and I think we still have some ways to go there.
Great. Thank you again so much for joining us this afternoon, Kelly. And Martin, we'll end with you with closing thoughts.
So I just want to say that John hit the nail with his comment about success. I think that, you know, it is critical. You could be like John said, you could be have the best intent, concepts, et cetera, but if you don't get stakeholder buy-in, it's very difficult to succeed. One of the things that I was thinking about is, you know, this whole thing with Amazon Business. That's one thing that we probably did not touch upon, even though John did mention that Coupa is on like an Amazon-like platform. I think users love to engage in Amazon or make purchases in Amazon. And what we've started to get the wrap the university around is having that tailspin funnel through Amazon Business, because they're, you know, low dollar, high volume transactional spend, because it also alleviates a lot of the transactional time and gives the procurement team much more time to focus on the more strategic aspects of it. So, and at the end of the day, that will benefit the university more.
Great, thank you so much, Martin. Got time for a few Q&A. Doesn't look like we have any in the Zoom functionality quite yet, but folks, please, the question feature is still open. So if you have questions, please send them our way. Sounds like Stephen did get a few via email. Looks like this first one's related to the comments you were just making on buy-in, but our listener wants to know, specific to getting your VPFA and senior leaders on board, if you have any tips how to get their buy-in for funding some of these new initiatives that you described. Martin, do you want to kick that off since you just were commenting on buy-in?
Yeah. So that's a difficult
Q&A, but it's just not
question,
because
so
panelists and Stephen can see
the problem is that if there's no funding, it's really difficult to get leadership buying.
I told you not to do that.
But sorry. I guess I would say, you know, you just need to have as much data supporting the, you know, first of all, making sure that you have concrete costs, as well as identifying what the benefits are, because without that, as a senior leader, you wouldn't have their buy-in unless you can clearly define those things. And sometimes it's not as cut and dry, so it's difficult to put that on paper, but you're gonna have to put some assumptions down and present that to your leadership. Otherwise, you would be rejected anyway. I think there's not a definitive answer to that question. I hope that helps.
Certainly. John, would you like to comment on this as well? So you talked about buy-in.
Yeah. So Martin's right. It's very difficult, very difficult area to traverse. A couple things I will say about that is, one, if you can make an argument that you don't know where you're spending your money, and you can't track where the money goes, I think that tells a story in and of itself. And then it becomes, well, how do we fix that? So that's the opening portion of that. And I mean, when I came to Brandeis, it was, well, where are we spending our money? And nobody had any idea. Well, we had sort of an idea, but there were big pockets and huge gaps, and that made senior leadership very, very nervous. And that was an area of opportunity. So that's one. The second thing is, a lot of these companies out here now actually have models where they can justify, if you spend this, the savings, the industry standard savings will be Y. So there are things you can look at to sort of develop that argument a little bit with senior management. And to Kelly's point of view, which I thought was fantastic, was there's other areas where if you can build a revenue stream that might help to do that. So she's absolutely right about the P card. One of the things that we looked at when we implemented this was, what are we going to do with P card revenue and a rebate? And this is going to help fund a lot of what we're doing. So there's a number of different methodologies that you can use. And it takes some creativity, but at the end of the day, it's not something that's relatively new anymore. And so there are some proven models out there that you can kind of piggyback off of.
Great, good points, Jen. Kelly, anything you'd want to add on the executive buy-in question?
Well, for us, our executive sponsor was our Vice Principal of Finance Administration. I think she had long recognized that we need to be running our business more like a business. So that was great, and she was able to get support from the provost and the principals. There certainly was the senior leadership buy-in. I think they realized it just made good business sense. We have a budget model here where basically the deans from the faculties provide funding for the shared services. The deans were supportive of it. So from that perspective, we certainly had the senior leadership, and also I think recognition for us, we were the seventh Ontario school, we're part of a consortia, to implement these changes. So it was happening around us, and if we wanted to stay relevant and with our peers, we needed to move forward. And then getting the buy-in across campus, you know, of course, there's some groups that were hugely supportive right out of the gate, and then there was other ones, not so much, and we had to spend more time going out there. And we still have a few, you know, faculty out there who, you know, they just want to buy what they want to buy because they have really important research and teaching to provide the students. And that's fine, too. You know, we can work with their faculties to, if they don't want to be as hands-on in the process. But overall, we've done very well with the buy-in, and I think, you know, we've had a lot of success, and success breeds more success. And when we've had to go in and do some extra communication and hand-holding for certain groups, we're willing to do that as well.
Great. Thank you, Kelly. Got time for at least one more question. We had one come in through Zoom. I'll direct this one at Martin first because it's related to Amazon, which you just raised. The question is, with Amazon Business, were you able to mask the items that can be viewed or purchased so that your users can't buy items that you have existing contracts for? Example she gives are books that should go through your bookstore contract or IT items that should be bought under a punch-out catalog and existing contract. They're trying to ensure that by opening up an Amazon marketplace, they're not allowing our users to be in breach of existing contracts.
Right.
Martin, do you have thoughts on that?
So that's interesting because that was one of our concerns as well. So Amazon is actually testing something called curation, which basically blocks users from purchasing certain types of items. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but we had the very same concern. So we have contracts for office supplies and, you know, computer hardware, etc. And we did not want users to actually make purchases through Amazon, you know, because that would take away from contracts that we've negotiated. So on a regular basis, we do reviews because Amazon does have a very strong analytic tool. So we run reports to see, you know, of the items that were purchased, how many of those were restricted items. Now, restricted items does not mean that they can't purchase it. They can still go ahead and purchase it, but when they're actually buying, a message will pop up on their screen which says this item should not be purchased and can be purchased, and we have an existing contract with an alternate provider, etc. So that just is a warning, but the user can still proceed. But on a regular basis, we do monitor that.
Thank you, Martin. We have time for one last question. Go ahead, John.
Let me just follow up with that.
Absolutely.
So we actually are able to do that. And I'm not, without getting too far in the weeds, unfortunately, my director of operations would be able to answer this much more eloquently than I can. But our Amazon business account goes through our marketplace, and because it goes through our marketplace as a punch out, our buyers actually are able to reject orders that are tied to the code. So if something comes in, somebody's trying to buy office supplies, they will reject it and basically say we have a contract with such and such company. You have to go through them. So the ability to do that is definitely there.
Great, thanks so much for chiming in there, John. Well, fitting that our last question was directed to Kelly. The question is about the. When you rescoped your job descriptions and hired for new roles, you mentioned that you raised the salary bands and changed the descriptions themselves, and that attracted better candidates. The listener wants to know if you recruited anywhere differently, if you posted your positions or pursued any different recruiting practices.
We did, actually. We had our in-house recruiter put out job ads, of course, we went to the professional designation, but we actually changed the job ad, so there's the job description and then there's a one paragraph, and we spent some time on that, and actually we had feedback from the folks who responded to the job ad that they found it very compelling. So as much as higher education has some pain points for us that were decentralized and that sort of thing, but we really did play up, do you want to be part of leading edge innovation in this country, and we're looking to build a team for the future. Those sort of points we put in the job ads, and we did widely recruit it, because typically here at the university, all of our job descriptions, or all of our job ads are posted on our HR website, but this year we did go out to various websites and paid ads to attract better talent.
Great, thank you, Kelly. And thank you all for joining us today, and for everyone on the line for your participation and questions. You know, I'd heard a lot of what was said today before we spoke with all of you on the phone, but it's been really interesting to hear the conversation and to hear both the similarities and differences in all of the initiatives that you've pursued. So certainly invite you all to continue the conversation. Email us any other questions that you'd have. But we hope that we'll hear from and see a lot of you on the line on February 13th, when the research team will host a results webinar where we share highlights of these stories, plus a whole lot of other stories and successes, lessons learned from other institutions across the major challenges that you sourced for us in the kickoff webinars. So wherever you're dialing from, hope you stay warm and have a great evening. But thank you for being on the line today. Take care.